I am taking a calculated risk. What's the upside? I overcome my nausea, fall deeply in love, babies, normalcy, no more self-loathing. Downside, I date Michael Scott publicly and collapse into myself like a dying star.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity.
Hello, all you villain lovers.
Ooh, spicy.
Yeah, we need like a cool name for our fan base.
Yeah, villain lovers, evildoers.
Ooh, evildoers. That's a good one.
Yeah, but it implies that our listeners are evil.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, if you have a cool name to call yourself because you're such a big fan of the podcast, let us know so that we have a way to refer to you, because villain lovers felt very uncomfortable to me when I said it out loud.
Villain lovers. Some people would like it.
Yeah. Anyways, we are back today with another episode of our podcast where we try to empathize with fictional villains, and we have a real doozy for you today.
Oh, yes. A real booby spicy, sorry. Booby spicy, fierce villain today.
Yes. I think those are all actually, as much as I laugh, accurate descriptors of Jan Levinson Gould, or now known as Jan Levinson, from The Office.
The Office!
And you know, another thing is we always announce these villains as if it's a big surprise to our listeners. When it's in the title of the show, like if you're listening, you chose this episode probably because you know who this villain is, and then we're like making some big reveal out of it.
What? It's Jan? Who knew?
Now, if you're listening at home, you might say, wait a minute, Jan's not a villain. Well, yeah, that's one perspective. But I think personally, I have been trying to figure out a way to do an episode about The Office since we started this show. And as I've been thinking and thinking, she just seemed like the most likely candidate for a villain because of the role she plays, particularly in Michael's life. And the way that she treats him really negatively, which we'll all dive into. But hopefully by the end of this, you'll agree with us that she is a villain, but also that we can empathize with her.
Yeah, I'd say she's not as villainous as Mr. Todd Packer, who basically whenever he comes on the show, I kind of want to punch him. But, you know, hey, Jan is much more interesting.
Yeah, Todd Packer's a real jerk, real scumbag. Yeah. And I just don't think he's that interesting. He's just a crappy dude, really.
I know. Real, literally crappy, because he put some crap in. Anywho, it's not really about him. This isn't about him. Shut up, Todd Packer. Okay. So yeah, let's do our 30-second whatever have you, 30-second challenge. I forgot the word challenge. Because even though anyone listening to this has probably seen The Office maybe like 4 to 5 times, it still might be good to remember a few of the key things that Jan does. Some key information of who she is, too.
Yes.
So, you get to go first.
Great. Count me in. I'm ready to go.
3, 2, 1, go.
Jan Levinson is a corporate executive at Dunder Mifflin Paper Company. She oversees a bunch of different branches. She's a very strong, powerful woman. She exudes strength and fierceness, and she's just an awesome
boobie.
Powerful lady who has a boob job because she wants to and she feels empowered by it. I wasn't doing well, but then I got derailed. I feel like sabotage from you.
Yes. Well, I was just trying to help you out, you know.
Yeah. I didn't intend to bring up her boob job, but
it's literally the only thing I can think about right now.
Good. Well, You can think about it some more when you do your 30 seconds, starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so Jan is interesting because she starts to date Michael, and then they kind of have this like weird kiss, and then she kind of starts to like him because she sees something in him, even though he's really quirky and weird. And so they start dating, but then they have a really awkward dinner party, and she kind of throws a dundee at a TV and says a lot of also weird comments and makes Michael get vasectomies. And it's just kind of all around a bad deal with their relationship. And so that's Jan.
Awesome. Actually, that's great because I kind of talked about her job and you kind of talked about her personal relationship.
Right. I feel like it's not just about the challenge. I feel like this task is also about filling people in of what they need to know.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So, like, we fill each other in. We're a team. You know, we're a team.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
Because whenever I hear yours, I think, okay, this is what he focused on, so I should mention something else, you know?
Yeah. It's actually, I think it's harder to go first.
Yeah, because then you feel overwhelmed. Like, you have to, like, fill in everything.
Yeah, I always get overwhelmed, which is why... People always like, your intro is better than mine, probably.
And just because I'm better, but, you know.
I guess.
Just kidding.
Anyways, back to Jan. So I'm kind of an Office super fan. I've watched it from the beginning to the end 10 plus times at least. Yeah.
And you're not the only one.
No. Yeah. It's kind of a thing that like people get addicted to The Office. I looked this up once and... It's like an actual thing that people talk about is Office addiction. It's because of the comfort of it and the familiarity. And so it just becomes something that people connect to and relate to. And then it just like reinforces that feeling of comfort when they watch it.
Oh, yeah. It's so relatable. And it's so funny. So when you feel exhausted from the day or like exhausted from the news, you just escape into The Office and everything just feels better. In fact, I love The Office so much, it's been on during sexy time multiple times.
You know, I've not tried that out, but maybe I will now.
You get distracted easily.
From?
Because you're watching The Office.
From which? Oh, from the sexy time?
Yes.
Oh, boy. We've really derailed here.
Hey, that's okay.
Yeah, because so has Jan. She really derails.
And... She does.
I thought that a good way to approach this episode would be to kind of talk through what happens with Jan over the course of the show. Because when we first meet her, she seems like a pretty put together, strong executive type woman. But by season 3, season 4, she's really fallen apart and seems just like she's just broken to pieces and gone a little crazy. And I think it's kind of difficult to see how that transformation happened when you're looking back because she only appears sporadically throughout the seasons. But I went through this past week and I watched all of the episodes with Jan in order and I took very extensive notes and plotted what I think is a very clear and sad and unfortunate demise of her as a person and a lot of personal tragedy that led to her really breaking down.
Yeah. So you have a PhD in Jan. Basically. I'm going to make you a certificate of that someday.
I would love that, actually. And we should put it on Instagram.
Yes. Oh my God. I even already have a certificate template. Okay.
Great. And maybe we'll make a little quiz and you two can listen or fill it out and get a certificate in Jan.
Yes.
That's a fun idea. I like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to go through this timeline I created and feel free to jump in at any point. If you like, so that our listeners aren't put to sleep by the droll of my voice.
No, it's a good podcast voice. You should be proud.
Thank you. Well, we first meet Jan in the very first episode, episode 1, season 1. And at this point, like she just seems like a tough, competent executive. She's pretty harsh. But on the flip side of that, she has to deal with people like Michael, who is clearly pretty incompetent. So you can understand why she might be harsh towards him. And this is, I think, one of our first opportunities to be empathetic for her because Michael and some others refer to her as Hillary Rodham Clinton, which could be a positive in 2016. But I believe at the time they meant it in a negative way, which is really unfortunate for both Hillary and Jan. And it kind of, it calls back to this thing, which I think that Hillary Clinton ran into when she was running for president, that that when women are in positions of power and that they're when they're strong, we see them as mean and bad people, versus when men are in those same positions and acting in the same way, we see them as strong and good leaders. So I really kind of felt for Jan here that I'm sure she has to really put up this strong front in order to get taken seriously in her executive position. And yet, because of that, she's kind of painted as this villain.
But even in general, because I think she's vice president.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I was impressed with her. She's in probably a pretty male-dominated field of paper. Yeah. And she's like vice president. Like that probably takes a lot of work mm-hmm. to get to. And so I've always been kind of like impressed, like, ooh, she's successful. She wears a suit and yeah, she makes executive decisions. Fancy.
Throughout season one, I think we see her as a pretty competent boss.
Yeah.
She is able to make tough decisions. She's able to have difficult conversations. She communicates very clearly to Michael, who once again is kind of a buffoon. And so I can really respect that, because as a manager myself, that is one of my weak points, is talking directly and clearly with employees who are performing negatively is not something I like. And so I really look up to Jan's ability to do that. Now, season two is where I think we start to see the beginning of Jan falling apart. And I'll point to the specific episode, which I think is called The Client, where Jan and Michael have a meeting set up with the Lackawanna County School Department. And it's a really big account. And there's a lot of pressure on this meeting because it's such a big account that it could keep the branch from going under. So Jan's under a lot of pressure and she's not leaving this up to Michael. So she's come with him to try to make this sale. And then while this sale is happening, we find out that she is also going through a divorce. I mean, she's in a rough place. I've never been through a divorce, but I have been through a breakup during a difficult, stressful time at work. And it really wears on you.
Yeah.
That's somewhere we can really relate to her. I think a lot of people have been through stressful times where they haven't been at their best.
And in that episode, Michael kind of becomes this like magical safety net who just kind of saves the day. And I would totally make out. Of course, you would make out with the person that practically like saved your butt. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, that's a really good insight, I think, as to why she initially hooks up with Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Because during that episode, she's very frustrated, but throughout them meeting at the Chili's and having this meeting, and Michael really asks her about her relationship, and they have this really kind of intimate discussion. And then on top of that, Michael makes this huge sale. So I think you're absolutely right that she was going through a lot of bad things, and then Michael potentially like saved the company, saved a major part of Jan's job, and he really showed that he cared about her emotions. And then we don't know this yet, but we learn later that they didn't even hook up, but that Michael stayed with her in a hotel all night and cried with her throughout the night.
I had actually forgotten about that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that shows you a couple of things. First of all, it shows you how difficult of a time Jan is having.
Mm-hmm.
And also it lends evidence to why is she hooking up with this guy who is like just bonkers. Well, he sat and listened to her all night and he cried with her, and that's intimate, and they share that now.
And I think some people may have been a little bit confused, like why would a supervisor hook up with her subordinate? Because that's a little bit taboo, right? And so, or just kind of strange, I guess.
It's a lot of bit taboo. It's,
yeah.
Yeah, for sure not generally okay.
Right, yeah. And I was actually surprised that Dunder Mifflin would be okay with that, because I don't think every company is. Of course, Dunder Mifflin was okay with it as long as you like sign some paperwork. And so I think some people were a little bit like, she's kind of weird. Like she didn't like him and now she is making out with him. But now that you explain it, it's totally obvious now why she would do this kind of taboo thing.
And I'm not excusing it, because I think that a relationship between a supervisor and an employee is at best questionable. But most of the times there's a power dynamic that's uncomfortable, and I just think it should be avoided. And yeah, you're right. It's surprising that Dunder Mifflin ultimately ended up being okay with it. So from that moment on, for the rest of season two and into some parts of season three, Jan and Michael have this weird thing where Jan refuses to talk about what happened, but then she'll occasionally like make out with Michael. She's clearly got this strong attraction to him, and she's denying it, which is really unfortunate. And I wanted to bring in a quote from way later. I think this is from like season 8 or 9. No, not that far. Maybe 6 or 7, where Michael is revisiting all his past lovers to talk about why their relationships failed.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
because he does have herpes on his lip.
Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that. I'm sorry.
No, but like, hey, what, 60, 70% of the population has whatever type herpes, cold sore herpes on their face?
Including me right now.
Laugh at him for that. I shouldn't be ashamed of it.
Just kidding.
So when he goes to talk to Jan, she explains what her situation was. And she says, and this is a direct quote, "In the beginning, we were not good. If there was anything exciting about it, it's because we both knew it was wrong. Imagine there's a princess who falls for a guy beneath her station, and the queen doesn't like this at all, and then the princess knows the queen doesn't like it, so it makes her want to do it all the more, just to get at the queen." And then Michael's like, "So I'm the princess?" And she's like, "No, I'm the princess and the queen."
Oh.
So it's like she knows that it's wrong, but she kind of does it to get at herself, probably because of all the stress and pain that she's going through in her life. She's got this conflict where it feels so good because she knows it's so wrong. And there's this like self-indulgence thing happening with her.
And that's understandable. It feels so good to do something secretive that is wrong but exciting.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that it's good to do that because you end up paying for it later. But
it feels good.
It does. And it does.
Yeah. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. And this might be one of those bad times, but it is what it is. So throughout season 2 and season 3, they've got this kind of on and off thing until in season 3, Michael talks her into going on Jamaican vacation with her, where they have sex for the first time and the second time and the third time and the fourth time. And the fifth time.
Yeah, get it.
6 times. They had sex 6 times in Jamaica. Damn. Pretty good. Yeah.
And how long was that trip?
I don't know.
No.
No, probably more than a day. Just yeah. From personal experience. And. Oh, boy. Okay. When they get back from vacation, Jan comes to Michael and she really explains, I think, very clearly what she is going through. And she tells Michael, she says, "In the past year, I've gone through divorce, identity theft." That's new information and sucks. She says, "A husband who would not communicate." And she says her psychiatrist thinks she has self-destructive tendencies and that for once she should just indulge them. And she says that she owes it to herself to find some kind of happiness, even if it means lowering her expectations.
Michael. Ouch.
Yeah. Ugh. Michael, this woman is whatever. We're talking about Jan. So she says, "I'm attracted to you. I don't know why, but I am, and I just need to follow my instincts." She says, "You're wrong for me in every way, but I still find myself wanting to be with you."
When you're in therapy, you really take what your therapist says really seriously because they're like a licensed therapist, right? Like they went to school for this, you know, studied psychology and got licensed, and you feel that they're definitely more competent than you in figuring out emotions and figuring out what to do. And so I don't really blame her for really taking her therapist's words to heart, even if that therapist sucked.
Yeah. And this therapist, I think, really sucked.
Because
later on, we find out that Jan films them having sex.
Oh, yeah.
And then shows the videos to her therapist, which seems wildly inappropriate to me.
Yes. Oh.
I can't imagine this is a good therapist. I'm glad that she has seen a therapist, but I think she needs to find someone different.
Right, and no one told her that. No one was like, "Look, Jan, nice boobs, but gotta..."
Well, and how do you know if your therapist is a good therapist, right?
Right.
Like, I just kind of trust that my therapist knows what she's doing, but I've only seen one therapist.
Right.
If other therapists are different and like way better, I don't know it.
Yeah.
Because I trust that my therapist is an expert in her field and knows what she's doing. Anyways, I mean, we're all just like building this like thing after thing in Jan's life that is going wrong for her.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, she finally decides to go public about her relationship with Michael. This is where we start hearing really bad things about Jan. We've seen her in her work life, but now we're starting to get snippets of what what their relationship is like, and it's not good for Jan. Michael tells the women at the office that about the videotape therapist thing, and he tells them that she makes him dress up as a schoolgirl for sex, and he's uncomfortable with it. And
he wears the dress, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, Michael. She ignores their safe word, which is foliage, which is a great safe word, I think. But apparently she pretends she doesn't hear it. And she even offers...
That's real bad.
Yeah.
That's another level, actually, of bad right there.
Yeah. She offers to pay Michael to come see her, which Michael is understandably uncomfortable with. So he breaks up with her. And this I think is the big breaking point. My theory is Michael breaking up with her. Because she's now gone through all of this tragedy, all of these bad things have happened to her, and she's trying to get better, and she's lowered her standards. She's decided to see this guy who she believes is lesser than her. She thinks she is way better than Michael, and that she is in control of everything. And then that guy breaks up with her, and I think it shatters her. Like,
yeah.
I think she thought that, if anything, she would break up with him when she was done with him, which is, you know, a negative way to approach a relationship. But I think that that's a real breaking point for her. And from here on out, she just goes bonkers. Like, she just loses it. And I wish I could think of like a more appropriate wordage to explain it, because I'm not trying to say she's like crazy or psycho. I think she has a mental breakdown. And she doesn't have any support network.
Yeah. And before people start saying, like, that was kind of mean of her to think that Michael was below her, also think about the fact that there could have been times that you also started dating someone who you thought was, quote unquote, below you. And, you know, it happens more often than we think, which kind of stinks because you might have other reasoning for why you did that. But maybe it's like a rebound or something, but it happens. It happens where people are like, I'm going to take a chance on this person who, yeah, I, you know, might not be as successful as I am, but I like them, so I'm going to do it. People think that whether they like it, whether they admit it or not.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a very uncomfortable truth about a lot of relationships. Or on the flip side, you might feel that the other person is above you, which is not a good place to be in either, but...
Crap, I just realized it.
I'm
not as cool as my boyfriend, guys. I'm sorry.
So Jan gets a boob job.
Yes, that's the best part.
She shows back up. They're broken up at this point, and she shows up at his office to try to win her back. And Michael is trying his darndest to not get back together with her, but she whips those things out, and he just cannot help himself. He says, Jan's in a better place now. Now, we also learn some more bad stuff about Jan here, because this is also the episode she gets fired. And David Wallace very clearly lays out the reason she's fired. Her behavior has been erratic. She smokes in her office. She's been online shopping basically her entire day. She leaves work all the time and just doesn't come back, which understandable that she's been fired, but remember all these terrible things that are happening to her and that she has no support. I've got another quote from her from later down the road where she's looking back and she says, she's comforting Michael because he's really upset, and she's kind of explaining to him why she is with him. And she said, my whole family won't even talk to me. My friends were just waiting for this all to happen. And what I want to say is that you were there for me by my side without even a thought. No matter how badly I treat you or what I'm going through, you are there for me. And that is a guy worth staying beside. So we can see that, like, this relationship was bad for Michael, but it was the only person that Jan had in her life that was on her side.
Right. In some ways, it might even be a little bit of bad luck, because in every relationship, I would say that at least one partner will go through something really hard during the span of the relationship but it usually doesn't seem so bad because things were good in the beginning of the relationship or in the middle of the relationship. I feel like what happens in a lot of relationships is like you're dating for maybe like a year to 2 years or 3 years or more, and then one of the partners goes through something really difficult. And maybe they get really impulsive and they start doing destructive things, but then they kind of resolve it with the support of their partner and they get through it, right? I feel like it's kind of bad luck in how short their relationship was before the time that Jan went a little bit quote unquote crazy, because I feel like a lot of people have not done exactly what Jan has done, but kind of spiraled before while being in a relationship. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem as bad because they weren't horrible in the beginning. You know, they weren't horrible for like the first 2 years, or they weren't, you know, and then they get through it and it gets better. Of course, if it doesn't get better, then that's another conversation and decision. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like maybe Jan wouldn't be considered so bad if they just had been dating for some time and then she goes through this dip and this weird craziness and then gets better.
Yeah, you're right. The problem is that she dove into this relationship because of all the bad stuff that was happening and not in spite of it, which is really unfortunate. And I think now the kind of the culmination of everything that's gone on all comes together in the dinner party episode.
Yes.
The iconic episode where Jan and Michael host a dinner party for Pam and Jim and Andy and Angela and Dwight and his ex-nanny. We learn a lot about him and Michael's relationship, and I know we're trying to be empathetic, but it's a lot of bad stuff for Jan here.
Yeah.
She has basically taken over his life, remodeled his condo, and still trying to like change things that he doesn't think is a problem. Like she thinks the carpet's ugly, even though it's just a regular carpet. She's taken up two of his rooms, one of them for her office, one of them for her workspace. She makes him sleep on a bench at the end of their bed, which is really sad.
It's sad, and, but we're laughing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So this is kind of embarrassing, but I can kind of relate to this because, oh man, this is really embarrassing. I dated someone for a period of time who, for whatever reason that I never really understood, could not share a bed with someone overnight or could not sleep with someone else in the bed. So whenever we spent the nights together, I would have to get out at some point and sleep on the couch. And it's really demoralizing. I really felt for Michael.
Yeah.
In this
very
moment.
Relatable.
Yeah.
At least it was probably long enough. Was the couch long enough?
Yeah, it was a lot bigger than Michael's little bench that he had to curl up on. Oh, Michael.
I do want to say that I think the craziest part of the dinner party to me is when she throws a Dundee at his sole possession that he can have.
His little TV.
She throws it. Like, how heart-wrenching is it that your only like possession that you can still keep is broken? Anywho.
Yeah. We also learned that Michael has had multiple vasectomies. He had a vasectomy and then he had it reversed and then a vasectomy again because Jan couldn't decide whether or not she wanted kids. This is a really unhealthy relationship.
Yeah. Because of all the funny, ridiculous things that happened in that episode, maybe some people also don't notice a part where she, and this is something that kind of manipulative people do, is they try to make it look like the victim is the one who is manipulating them. And yes. There's a part like right after the vasectomies conversation where I can't remember it completely, but they're like, fine, I do want babies. Or she says like, fine, let's have a baby, whatever you want, as if mm-hmm. to like show that Michael's the one controlling her. And that's really problematic.
Yep.
But I guess since we're talking about empathy, right? to go back on maybe for why Jan did that, I guess she could genuinely believe that he is maybe having some control that she doesn't like, or still feeling like he's influencing her in ways that she doesn't like. So maybe she's getting really defensive about that. She just genuinely believes that she should have more control.
I think that she is someone who needs control in order to feel okay. And that might be the backbone of her entire demise, is that she was okay at one point because she was in control, even though she clearly needs some help. She clearly needs a support system, but as long as she can control everything, she's okay. But that's such a bad place to be in. And it's a place that I can kind of relate to, because I'm kind of the same way, that if you rely on that control in order to be comfortable, then as soon as you lose that control, it's really hard.
Yeah.
The world becomes incredibly difficult and you can just spin out of control. And I think that's the thing about Jan, is her arc over the course of whatever number of seasons is a portrait of a woman slowly losing control of her life and not having anybody there to support her. I mean, Michael was there for her and he tried, but he is not qualified. He does not have the tools to help her out.
Yeah.
And she was abusive to him, and she, we shouldn't ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, if she had a strong support system, a decent therapist, maybe this would not have happened. Maybe we could have prevented all of this terrible relationship.
Right. We can kind of assume that Jan hasn't always been this way, because she apparently did have a successful marriage at one point in time. And it sounds like it probably lasted a good chunk of time. I think I remember that the reason why they divorced is because of a disagreement about whether to have babies or not, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember, but that definitely sounds like a Jan thing.
Yeah. And so we can assume that she's not always like this. We can assume that this is not just who she is, that she has potential to get better, that she has potential to kind of revert to where she was before everything spiraled out of control. And that is really hopeful, I think. And also is a testament to the fact that she's not completely evil. You know, it's like, to me, absolute morality doesn't exist, right? So she is a good person, probably in other times, in other instances. It's just right now, she really sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, she never really gets better. We don't really get to see her in a better place. She appears kind of sporadically throughout the rest of the seasons. She has a daughter, whom we find out she had artificially inseminated while she was with Michael without telling Michael.
Ooh.
Which is particularly troublesome considering the multiple vasectomies. And she does hold multiple other jobs, which I guess is promising. She clearly has some competency in executive positions, because she later gets a job at the White Pages, which they sell to her again. But Dwight sells her one of the young interns who goes on a sexcation with her. And that's why they get her business. She never recovers, unfortunately.
Yeah. Fully. Oh my gosh, I just realized something. And maybe it was really obvious to everyone else.
What's that?
But she also has this strange liking to her assistant, Hunter.
Oh yeah. I guess we missed that.
And actually, I will get more into that with my poetry.
Ooh.
But now I'm starting to think, does she have some kind of fetish when it comes to liking people who are kind of her subordinate?
I think definitely.
I just realized that. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually just this morning I was watching the episode where Dwight brings her their intern in order to get their sale as a trade. And he was definitely playing off the fact that she had been into her other young assistant. So I think that is a fetish for her, which is fine. If that's what you're into, but also the other person needs to be into it as well.
Right. Needs to be consensual for sure.
Yeah. And it's very difficult to have a consensual relationship between a subordinate and a boss.
Yeah.
Not impossible, but I have to be skeptical, I think.
I'd like to assume that Hunter enjoyed his attention. I mean, the attention he received.
I hope it was better with Hunter than it was with Michael.
Yeah.
For Hunter's sake.
Right.
And that he wasn't scarred for life.
You know? I assume he wasn't, because he wrote a song about her, I guess.
Yeah.
We assume it's about her. Maybe it's not.
Took that me one night. By the hand, made me a man.
Sing it.
That one night.
Made everything all right.
I'm not a good singer. Anyways, Okay, I kind of took over this episode. Did you have any other notes on Jan that you wanted to dive into?
The only point that I really had was that I was so intrigued with Jan's impulsivity for some of the things that she got fired for, like smoking in her office, doing whatever the heck she wanted to do, leaving the office, going to get a boob job, and then also yelling at David Wallace, like, is it these? Is it the girls? I don't remember the quote totally, but part of me also kind of admired it a little bit. I mean, of course, I never like want to get fired, and we always have to have kind of like a filter in order to maneuver throughout this world, but I guess I admired her stick it to the man kind of bravery-ish, if you want to call it that. Her true, like, messy self blended into her professional life, and everything got really crazy and messy. But this is also, like, who she was at the time. Mm-hmm. And there are just, I guess, maybe some people out there who are kind of at heart, kind of reckless. They kind of like the adrenaline of doing something weird or exciting or illegal or like just crazy, right? And when you're someone who's like that, you have to work really hard to control yourself. And you have to work harder probably than a lot of other people to put up that facade at work. And I felt kind of lucky where if I acted like my true actual self at work, it doesn't mean I wouldn't get fired. You know, I'm just a generally mild person who doesn't really seek out thrill like that the way a lot of other people do. And so I kind of felt bad for her that this part of herself, she probably would have to work really hard to suppress that in order to not get fired. Your self-suppression, some people have to work at it harder than others. And I think when she's going through all of this mess, she kind of decided not to suppress it and just let it loose.
Yeah, or she just couldn't suppress it any longer.
Right.
It was just boiled over.
Yeah, just boiled over. And that's, you know, that's hard. It's hard to suppress real actions and feelings that you feel, you know. It can get really hard to do that.
Yeah.
Especially like during a pandemic, go to work and like everything feels like it's spiraling out. Hell yeah, I kind of feel like smoking a cigarette while I work. It's a really hard time. And she just did it. She just was like, screw it. I'm not going to let the man suppress how I feel. I'm going to do what I want, you know? And that's kind of cool-ish.
Yeah.
I also wanted to be a bit fancy and apply a theory.
Whoa.
Yeah. Called ego cognitive depletion theory. So this is from Wikipedia. A major tenet of the theory is that engaging in acts of self-control draws from a limited reservoir of self-control that, when depleted, results in reduced capacity for further self-regulation. So basically, you have to exert a lot of control. You have to exert a lot of energy to control yourself. And when you do it so much, you get exhausted from it, and then it gets harder to control yourself later. And people go through this a lot. It's kind of like as muscles become fatigued after a period of sustained exertion and have reduced capacity to exert force, self-control can also become depleted.
Yeah, that's a very relatable idea, at least for me. Like, I'm a very anxious person. And when I am well rested and things are going well, my anxiety is very low. But when I have a lot of things going on, when I'm not getting enough sleep, when I'm like emotionally taxed, my anxiety just like skyrockets.
Yeah.
So I think this is something that a lot of people can relate to. And I think you're spot on that this is probably a lot of what Jan was dealing with. Just having to control all her worst urges and desires that were pulling at her and just eventually hitting so many different things in her life that just wore her down. So she did not have the ability to hold it back any longer.
Right. Because you have to have a lot of self-control as a vice president, as someone who's in an executive position. And then while her life is spiraling out of control, she probably did have a lot of self-control in the beginning of that divorce and that messiness, as we kind of notice in the series. And then if you have to keep trying to hold it in, it's just going to explode out. And then we see her making out with Michael and getting and doing all this crazy stuff because it just goes on for too long. And I think it's a testament to the fact that people really need better outlets for releasing their indulgences or probably through therapy, right? Like, as we've discussed, she needs a better therapist. And I've kind of noticed this in other instances. I also think it's a reason why there are people out there who deal with infidelity, because they have so much self-control of like, oh, I can't, you know, I don't know. It really depends on the person.
Right.
But
think about the Catholic Church and that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We get it. Yeah. You know, you suppress it. You suppress your urges so much. And then sometimes people just go through a breaking point.
Yeah.
And then they give in. They give in.
Yeah. Which is why, in a lot of ways, it's good to indulge some of your worst tendencies when you're able to, in safe ways, in ways that aren't going to harm other people and are going to release some of that pressure. So I thought maybe a good question, you know, to kind of relate to Jan in our own lives that we could ask is like, what self-indulgent tendencies do you have, and how do you experience and relate to them?
Yeah. Pick up books and I like sniff them and I just like smell them as if they're like a drug, but they're not. Mm. It doesn't. Interesting. Yes. But you like just pick up a book off a shelf and just like, yeah, smell it.
Yeah, absorb all that dust.
Yes, those mites. Smells good, you know? Smells real good. Just sit there and smell it.
Sure, yeah.
Smell it. I just come up here and I smell my books.
I'll trust you on that one.
How about you?
Well, it's not very unique, but it's one that affects me greatly, is like sugar and like chocolate and candy and all that stuff. I just cannot resist myself, like to the point where I can't keep that stuff in my house. If I have a tub of ice cream, I will eat it that night, the entire thing. It doesn't matter how big it is. I just, I cannot help myself. And it's something I struggle with constantly. So usually the way I deal with it is just not to have that stuff around, which is difficult. And I don't know, it's a struggle because I eat really healthy in my life most of the time.
Yeah.
And when I don't eat healthy, it wrecks me. I feel sick and I get really tired and I just feel bad, like emotionally and physically. But I cannot help but indulge when I have those things available. And yeah, I don't know. So I guess in that sense, I very much can relate to Jan kind of indulging in the things. Like, she knows, at least at certain points, that her relationship with Michael is not good, but that it feels good for her to indulge in it. And I can very much relate to that feeling. And I don't think it's a good thing necessarily, but it's something that I can understand. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. On another, like, I guess, more serious note, there was a period of my life where I would drink just to get to a buzz, or drunk and not for like really any other reason. I haven't done it in years now, but when I like was in China, I just would drink, I think, too much, maybe because I just was like in a new country, so I was really excited about it. But I also like tried to use it so that I would feel more comfortable speaking Mandarin. And they would say, well, if you drink, you practice your Mandarin more because you're not as nervous about it and you don't care as much and your language will improve, which is, I don't know, questionable advice. And I actually was told by my Chinese professor, don't get drunk in another country. Just don't do it. But no one listened to the advice, especially me. And I just remember there was even a time in China when I would lose my cell phone a lot, but it was like a flip phone and it was small. So it was kind of something that would just disappear at random times. So at like 3 a.m., 3 in the morning, not sober, I would go through the streets of China asking where my phone was, alone. And of course, some people will say generally China is safer than the United States for a number of reasons, but I stick out as a sore thumb because I'm just like a random white chick with really weird Mandarin. And I would just self-indulge a little bit too much in that, to where like I kind of put myself in danger. And I can relate to Jan because I think I like had a lot of pent up resentment towards my experiences in some of my experiences in college. And I think I kind of let it out in China. I didn't have to worry about a lot of things that I had to worry about at Concordia before I went. And so like I exhibited a lot of self-control in college, kind of, I don't know, that's questionable. But then I just kind of like let it loose for those 6 months. Maybe even Jan might feel like she made a lot of sacrifices. People tend to feel like they made a lot of sacrifices, so therefore they're justified in indulging in things later. People do it all the time, even just throughout the day when you have like a long day at work and you're like, oh man, I deserve some wine after that. Or I deserve this chocolate. I deserve this, right? And I think a lot of people really get into that. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if Jan did too, where she just felt maybe she had made a lot of sacrifices in her previous marriage or made a lot of sacrifices to get to vice president at Dunder Mifflin. And then you feel like, well, my therapist says I deserve this. I deserve this. I'm going to let loose. It happens.
Yeah. Well, this episode has really gone long. almost turned into a therapy session for ourselves here. But I think maybe we'll end it on a little bit lighter note, hopefully, with some poems that you put together. I guess I've not heard them, so I don't know if they're lighter or not. But I'd like to hear them. So here we go. Some poems by Tiana.
Okay. So three poems. All of them are letters to Hunter from the perspective of Jan.
Hunter, what for listeners?
Her beloved assistant.
Which, side note, one of my favorite moments of the entire series is when Michael is talking to Hunter right after she gets her boob job. And he's like, leave a message for me. Tell her I want to squeeze them. She'll know what it means. God. And then he goes, tell her.
Maybe we also need to recognize that Michael's also a little cuckoo. Okay. Anywho. Yeah,
okay, sorry, your poems.
Okay. Dear Hunter, I hope your band rocks like when you rocked that one night. Pulling and inserting. Pulling and inserting. File cabinet drawers.
Oh.
At 3 a.m. What did you think it was? Just kidding. At 3 a.m., while you would wear a black and yellow t-shirt so that I could buzz you whenever I needed you. You said my bee stinger knife that I keep in my office didn't hurt too bad, and it didn't hurt as bad as your, and I quote, melancholy of your solemn, soul-searching life. You're such an artist. And you said you had fun, and I'm so glad you did. And when I tended your sting wound with aloe, I don't know how to pronounce aloe. Only read it.
You got it right the first time.
Okay. Aloe, you said I made everything all right. So that poem, he like dressed up as like a bee. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's clear.
All right. Poem two. Dear Hunter, thank you for keeping my smoking a secret. Do you know what it's like to unravel? I started smoking when I was trying to impress a guy with a goatee and a machete in the alley. Now I am much wiser. We all grow like a pantsuit that needs to be stretched out after a rendezvous to the plastic surgeon. Now I am a woman who knows that eggshell white means that you have everything in control and everything will go smoothly, like an eggshell that needs to be held, always, in my grasp. I'm just doing what my therapist says I should do, using my smoking poetically, breathing deeply, and loving fruity love forever. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Poem three. Dear Hunter, thank you for buying all of my candles and being my first customer after having this business for 5 years. I really think it's about to take off. I always knew that you don't give up on dreams. This is what makes me strong. And I know that my life has been like my favorite candle smell. Foggy bed sheets. Even better than the laundry scent. Like foggy bed sheets, my life has been unexpected, daring, hot. I hope you are enjoying your new job at McDonald's drive-thru after corporate found out you are selling weed outside of the corporate office while pitching your CD at the same time. You are so talented. And I think it's important to believe in people, even when other people don't see that you believe in them. The end.
Those are great. I think you really captured Jan's energy and broken emotional state.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I could get my voice to sound a little bit more like her, but yeah. Probably just get Melora on the line, you know.
And with that, if any of you listeners out there are Jan Levinson impersonators, give us a call. We'd love to have you read these poems.
If you're Melora yourself, hit us up.
Yeah, if you are Melora Hardin, the iconic actress who played Jan Levinson, and you have listened this far into a podcast about your character, please hit us up. We'd love to talk to you.
All right. So this has been Next Door Villain Podcast. Please find us on Instagram, Twitter, where else? Oh, Facebook. We also have a Facebook group. It's secret, but you can join if you're special enough. Rate us, please.
Yep. And you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. We're in all the different places, I think. The episodes are written and produced by ourselves. And thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. Go get a boob job.